Accession number 24539, Reel 1.
An interview with former 360306, Private William Hill, 8th and 3rd Battalions, the Rifle Brigade, and later Sapper Royal Engineers, at his home at 2 Radley Road, Wallasey, on the 25th of April 1989, by Graham Maddox and Paul Byrne. The first question asks him why he joined the Army in 1914.
Two of my younger brothers had joined up. And so, of course, as soon as I heard they joined up, they joined up in August, and another one in September. They were both younger than me. I was the eldest of the family. I suddenly said, well, I've got to join up as well. So then that was it. November. They joined up earlier in September and October. As I say, I went down on, got examined and passed at the New Scotland Yard recruiting office. From there, we first went down to Winchester from London, and I stayed there a couple of nights, and afterwards signed and got a shilling for joining the army, you know, as we got. And signed on. We were sent down to Southend. There was quite a few of us from different parts of the country, you see. And was stationed there for a bit, for the winter anyway, until the early part of about Easter, I think, just before Easter anyway, 1915. Then we all went to camp, all in big camps down there. From there, I was sent after we'd done a time there and went across to France about June 1915, and was with the 3rd Army, 8th Battalion. And the 3rd Army. And the trench warfare started, so far as I was concerned, you see. We went to the first trenches, we were very good. We went to St. Quentin. We never had any injuries or anybody hurt for a month because we had the Anglo-German, what do you call it, Anglo-Sex. People of Germany, they were on our side, and they on the opposite side, and they weren't keen, you know, to fight us. We quite had a good time for about a month until they were pulled out and another lot came in. Well, this went on the trenches, and I got buried outside Ypres. I spent most of my time at Ypres, when I was in with the Rifle Brigade, we got shelled because the day before, in those days, the Royal Engineers used to come up and send over what we called mini Worfies, and oh, I forget the other name we used to call them, you couldn't print some of the words. But these mini Worfies, they were like a big ball. They could only be catapulted over when we were near enough to the trenches, you see, and near enough to the other trenches, because they could only send them so far, about 200 yards, so 250 yards or so. Well, they were very powerful when they went over, and they did a lot of damage. And they had sent us over, of course, the next day we got it back. Bombarded our front line where we were, you see. That very often happened in different parts of the trenches at that time. And I got buried with one or two others, and unfortunately nobody was killed, but we didn't receive the orders to go to each end of the trench, you see. But two of the other chaps were with me, and we were in the centre, and I got it. And the other two chaps got it. One I found out about a couple of years afterwards The name one of the chaps went off his nut, you see. And I came back to England. I was at Bromley in Kent from the November, towards the end of November, until April. Then rejoined the Army headquarters down at outside Chatham and Sittingmore, and we were there and doing different jobs. I went through a couple of courses there in NCO's course and one thing and another. We stayed there, and then towards the end of the autumn there, about October, November, I went back to France and was at Ypres again. But I was with sent to another company because one of our company got a bit knocked about, you see. Stayed there, and pretty well that was it, going in and out of the trenches. And until the beginning of 1918, I think I told Mr. Burns there, because occasionally we all had troubles, you know, we had scurvy, of course we had no fruit or any vegetables to eat, and I'd just had a dose of it a fortnight away down at the field, and came back to the main camp ready to go back to join my company, and the young officer came and asked me, he said, Hill, he said, I should see you would been a linesman and passed and that sort of thing. That's the sort of thing we did in when we were at home, you were told to do or go on these courses all the time, you know. I never thought I'd be useful to me, but telephones and that sort of thing. And he said, I see you, the linesman and telephone man. I said, yes. He said, do you want to go back to the trenches? I said, if I can dodge them, I will. I said, no, not particularly. Well, he said, we've got your name here. I said, you've been through this certain course, and we've got we want some men. A captain in the engineers, it invented a new film for photographing the sound. Marvellous invention it was. And so they put this group of, there was about a dozen of us in a group, and we'd go along to different places. If there was a certain gun that wanted, it was creating trouble and that sort of thing, they'd send us as near as we could behind our own lines and try and locate where this gun was being fired at. Well, you always used to get in with a 100 or less than that towards the end. They got in very close because in those days the batteries on both sides, you had four guns to a battery, you see. I don't know what they do now. And we very often got very near enough to dispose of these batteries or put them out of order, you know. And that's what as I went down to, as a matter of fact, when we were asked to go, or told to go, it was, I think, six or eight of us, we went down to Boulogne-sur-Mer, and that was the, Boulogne was the headquarters of the British Army, you see. We went right down to Boulogne-sur-Mer, and oh, we had a good time for about 5 weeks, away from all the trouble there. They didn't know there was a war on there, and new clothes and everything, you had to look smart. And so then we gradually went off and went to different parts of the line. And I was at Cambria when the war finished. We went up to Cambria, that was it. And when the armistice was signed, and then after that we were just messing about. I hadn't had any leave at all, of course, since 16. And on end of March, I think it was February, March, yes, about end of March, I I'd leave. Came home. Parents were living down in Lancaster, Watford. And, excuse me, when I got back, I was sent up right up to, and I'm trying to think of the name of the place. It was on, almost on the borders between Belgium and France, right up, because they'd moved, you see. And I'd been up there two or three days, mind you, after me leave. Get right back there. It takes us two or three days to get up, because the trains are, and the transport's so slow. Said, oh, you can go back home now. He said, it's your demobbed forms have come through. So wasted all that time going there and come back. And then came back. I forget the name of the place, somewhere in Berkshire where we went, got fitted up, and then I was back in civil life. Would you like anything, little ideas or things that happened during the...
Oh, yes,
while I was in the trenches or what?
Yeah, any incident at all you can recall, I'd be grateful to hear.
Well, I'd want to. Of course, we were from Popperinge, just outside Ypres. Some miles away, but Pottery and most as a lot of the troops. When we came out of the trenches at Ypres, we were sent back to the camp near at Popperinge. But halfway, when we came out in the evening, and we stayed at the very big country house, let's see, what do you call them in France? Country house. Anyway, and we came out and stayed there the night. It had been sandbagged, you know, sandbags all over the place, and we had a hot meal, you see, and just stayed there the night, and then went on to Popperinge. Marched on to Popperinge on the next day. And we were there 2 or 3 weeks, and then this happens several times. We do that, come backwards and forwards all the time. On two occasions there, I thought I was near my last, you know, at the time I was saying when we got to, when I got wounded, and we they came back, and the shells, four shells came over, they used to send them over in the battery, four shells. The first two were some distance away, that was okay, and the third was nearer to us, nearer, and the fourth one came, fortunately for us, although we got back, fortunately for us, it fell into the hole of the third shell, which helped us and saved our lives, because there was already a big hole already made, you see. But it did, as I say, two or three of us were buried. And I came, as I say, went to Bromley and that. Funny thing, and afterwards again, you go back there. But the second time, and where I really got the wind up, I don't mind telling anybody, we were really packing up to move on to another part of the line. We always had to, what they called, stand to at sunset. That means you stood there in your nearby, whatever position you were occupying, and wait till the bugle went and that sort of thing. And while I was waiting there, a shell came across. In the afternoon, one of Jerry's flyers, aeroplanes were going about. You know, we never used to take any notice, because at the time there were very few aeroplanes about. And if we saw one, we never take him. Evidently, this chap, he was a bit more accurate than some of the others. And after he'd gone, as I say, we were set to, stand to, and there was three officers and three badmen in a shell in the dugout, packing up, ready to move. You see, we were getting ready to move to another place. And I suppose from here to my front gate, I'd rather like being in the bay. It was in the bay. We were all cut out in the bay where three or four troops could be at a time if it was necessary. And the other side of the trench, which would be towards my gate, and the bunk where they were in, they were packing up, and this shell, honestly, I'm not bragging or boasting, and you know, I felt it pass my ear, and it went straight into this bunk, killed all six of them straight off the reel, you know. That put the wind up me more than any other time. I was telling Burns there that funny thing, amusing thing, I used to amuse the other. I was never afraid of a bullet. I always said it was too small to hit me. And it's a jolly good job there, they used to laugh, but I didn't like the shells. I was up at Hellfire Corner, I was telling Mr. Burns. I was up there quite a bit during the 2 years I was in the front line there, really. And we didn't lose a lot more troops than we did. It was marvellous to me because Jerry couldn't use the shells too much in case we were so close to the German lines, same as they were to us. And they used to come along there and towards the Hellfire Corner, our people, with the transport with all the good stuff in, and I had to dump them on the side and then turn around and go right back like that, because that's Hellfire Corner, they used to call it. But every night, oh dear. Otherwise, it was not all that interesting, really. We got once or twice we were all right. On one occasion, we were on the canal bank, and they got all the dugouts made out, you know, to this side of the bank. And that was an interesting time because there was rumours that there was talking about armistice, you see. You know, remember Lord George and that crowd, they were saying, oh, sent out special men, no such thing, no meeting had been made or anything, you know. Otherwise, it wasn't very interesting. There's only one thing that I did come across. My eldest cousin, he was a sergeant in the transport. I hadn't seen him for years because I was away at the north of England here, and he was an engineer on the railway. And I was walking along to the others, and in Popperinge, just outside Popperinge, they were there, and I happened to run across him. I met him there. That's the last I saw of him. And he was making inquiries about my brother and my cousin, two cousins, one from Luton and my cousin and my brother. They were all in the hearts and beds, and they got buried. Destroyed the Germans had dug underneath the trenches. You seen, blew it up. I met him there. Asked towards the last surrender, we didn't see a female for about 6 weeks, and that was a hospital train came up with the nurses when it was just out of Cambria there, was, you know, when they were coming up to collect the wounded. As the railway ran to the other side of the road from where we were, and we could wave it. But it was a dismal, you know, you go into the trenches, you come out, you're going back, you knew more or less what was happening. On another occasion there, when I was, as I say, when we were. What was it? I had something wrong. I was only just down the line. And I went down to the headquarters of the Silent Army. It was, of course, at Albert. And it was a big convent they'd taken over there. But it was a lovely place. I think I was telling me, I should never forget that place. that had been knocked about a bit, but this particular church, all the churches more or less have been damaged, except the cross, you know, and it was with the Christ on it, straight, and it had been, like, knocked, but supposedly like that, you know, and it was flat. Yeah. But he was still there, the cross was still there, and I thought then at the time that was an old man that, you know, wasn't a religious sort of man, and to think that that was still up, and the Christ was still on that, but it hadn't been destroyed, but the roof and everything else had been destroyed as a church. And Amiens, I think it was at Albert for about a fortnight before it got moved again, and we went, Pal and I, we went to Amiens. The trains were running then from Amiens, from Albert to Amiens, and so we were some distance towards Arras then, you see. Must have been. I've forgotten all about the names. We never used to worry too much about the names as long as we were safe, you know. But I was at Amiens there, and they was quiet. It was going about the jobs as usual, the church and cathedral, the steps and everything. And as I say, otherwise I was fortunate not to be in any thick, over-the-top business. Just escaped it in every time, you know, the particular company or the, I know just before we went there at Ypres, that must have been a lovely place before, the Durham Light Industry, one company had got underneath down in the cellars a cloth, I think they called it Cloth Hall. It was the centre of the business place, you know, there was a company there, and unfortunately for them, the Germans had shelled the place, and it went down the main entrance to the, and they all the lot of them got killed, you know, what with water and gas, it destroyed them. That was just before, well, that was the first lot I heard about when we went over. Otherwise, then when the armistice was signed, we knew that these little tanks were having what we call very single-handed tanks, the only one tanks, what they call them, and they made a battalion, and they went over, and that would frightened the young German soldiers, and they fled towards us, started the end of the war, that did, you know, when we was past just outside Cambria we were, and the trenches were up there in front of us, and the Canadians were there in front of us. They lost a lot of troops on the day of the armistice because they hadn't received the word that the armistice had been signed, you see. And that was one of the days that didn't get any rations up, because they had chaps at headquarters. They'd heard before that armistice was being signed, and they drank all their rum. And so he had to just use their bully beef and biscuits. But as I say, apart from that, there was no excitement. You were glad you went up the trenches, and you were all the same. You get your letters written beforehand, and you could tell all of us, you know, we'd go past down the Estaminet and have a wine, white wine, and of course you'd hear you going up the trenches the next day, and you just wonder who's coming back alive. That was what the question was, you know. And very quiet the night before. Really, no sing-songing or anything. They were all interested in getting letters written and that sort of thing. But I don't think I could elaborate on anything specially happening. It was just, as I say, just On one occasion of visit fund, we were out on our usual fortnights from the trenches. You did a fortnight on and a fortnight off, you see, in the trenches. And we were along Pot Orange there, and we were just walking down to the Staminet for a drink one evening, and there was a chap chained to the wheels at the camp, one of the camps, I think it was one of the transport camps on the side of Popperinge Road there. And you could tell he'd been there some time. He got, you know, been tied to the wheels, so you've probably heard about that. They used to do these sort of things. Anyway, we had known that we were going up in the trenches the next day, so it was through a few officers. We went to the guard room and told them if they didn't take this chap down, we would come and take him down. And he didn't. You really weren't too fussy then when you were going up there, except they were all very quiet the night before we went up to the trenches, especially the married men. They were, I thought they were very decent, most of them. So that's really what happened to me in the 1914-18 war. I enjoyed the, when I was in England, I enjoyed it quite okay. And I say down at South End there, the KRRs, they were at the other part of South End, because we were made up of the brigade or division, you know, sister regiments. But that was it. But after you once got over there, you get incidents there. There's one day we were waiting for lads coming up, fresh lads, and they'd only got off the main road from Popperinge Road. It was just over Ypres there, coming up the communication trenches there, and the Germans must have known they were coming. There were about 25 or 30 of them to join us, and they all got wiped out before they could reach us in the trenches, you know, in the communication trench. Pretty hard luck, pretty rotten, and it got you down a bit towards the end, you know. You were thinking, what the hell is this war going to do, you know? But since we got the armistice going, we didn't worry. We wanted to get out of the army.
Did you ever go on any patrols at all?
Yeah, well, on one occasion, we used to take it in turns. If the trenches are near enough, or as I say, not too far, we used to have to go and take a couple of nights out between the two lots of trenches, you see, and do what we call observation. There's about four of us with the NCO and three others. Well, it was only a big shell hole that had been made and improved, and iron girding put on top, and a bit of dirt on top of that. It was no actual protection from shells or anything, really. But was on that patrol, and but you see, you couldn't patrol very far because there was trenches on either side. I will say this, at Canberra, when they'd gone, we were able, a few of us, we were able to go and see the dugouts that the Germans had made. And, of course, they were marvellous. Marvellous. Of course, we never made any trenches, any dugouts to live in, because we didn't intend to stay in there, of course. But we went down these dugouts down below. God, it was safe as hell. Lovely. How they managed to dig them and made them like they did in a time, I don't know.